have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey, everybody. On this episode of Business Broker Growth, I have Claudio Vilas. He is the CEO of the Roofing Biz Broker. Claudio, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason. It's a pleasure being with you here today, and I hope I can add value to your audience.
I know you will. In the conversations we have, what I know about you, other people who know you in the roofing industry and in the broker world, there's going to be a lot. For people tuning in, if they don't know who you are a seasoned broker, M&A advisor, specializing in helping roofing and construction business owners. You founded the Roofing Biz Broker, creator of the Roofers Legacy Builders ecosystem, and really focusing on that. I love the thing that you sent me, which is your mission, simple, protect owners' legacies, reduce deal risk, and help business owners become sellable more than once. And I think it's great. And I think what's fascinating, we're going to dive into a little bit, is that your background led to different things that led to business brokerage, that led to this specialization, which I want to dive in to. And let's talk about it, you know, briefly, like your background. You were in a big corporate entity at one point in your life. And then, you know, that segued in here. So let's talk a little bit about that journey that kind of set you up where you are now.
Absolutely. I was there for too long, if you will, because I've always been an entrepreneur at heart, and I actually started as an entrepreneur. And you know, it's interesting to see that I went full circle. I started as a let me tell you why I started working or my own business is because I really needed money. And I was 18 years old. I was in Buenos Aires, and I was trying to pay for my studies. And one thing that I didn't want to do was to ask money from my parents. I hated that. I left my house, like I said, when I was 18, from a small town in Mar del Plata in Argentina. And I went to Buenos Aires, and I told my parents, I'm going to see how far I can get on my own. I don't want anything from you. I want to see how far I can get. And that got me in trouble because, you know, I really didn't have many skills and I had to make a living. So I lived in a very tiny apartment for a year or more. I had no furniture. I mean, zero. I was sleeping on the floor. And little by little, I started putting things together. And I remember when I bought my first TV, that was a huge thing for me. And I really didn't have any skills except for speaking English, because I did high school here in the United States, and that's what allowed me to start building my business. So I started teaching English, and I built a business that's called The American Way, and I believe it's still in Argentina because I sold it when I turned 26, and I joined J&J. So after that, J&J, Johnson & Johnson, amazing company. That taught me a lot of things. And I became a corporate employee for the next 20 some years of my life until when I turned 50, I said, this is enough. I gotta do something on my own again. And I did a few things, but then eventually became a broker. And here's what I am.
I love it. And what did that, let's say the corporate season of your life teach you, show you, or help you understand? I'm sure it gave you a lot of great experiences, but it sounds like it also helped you realize, like, you're an entrepreneur at heart running your
own. Well, I think the most important thing that being there taught me is the ethics of business. And let me explain that. Johnson & Johnson is a company that's a very ethical company. I know you're going to see some videos or some things that, you know, not everything goes well 100%, but it's more than 100,000 people there. Sometimes things happen. But the core of J&J is an extremely ethical company, and I was lucky to join them. Every time I talk about them, I talk about the credo. And J&J has a credo that was written in 1940s by Robert Wood Johnson. And it's a very simple credo, a very well written, and it really talks about the philosophy of business. And I want to paraphrase it here now because it's important, because it's what drove my life after that. Okay, so I learned a lot about marketing, a lot about financials. I learned a lot about distribution, but I think mostly I learned from that short credo. And the credo goes like this. It has four different paragraphs, four different areas, and it starts with the clients and the users of J&J's products and services. So it talks about, you know, the mothers, the fathers, the clients, the doctors, the nurses. Remember, it's a pharmaceutical company. So it talks about them first. Then it says basically that you have to take care of them. Then the second paragraph says, okay, we need to take care of our employees and the people that work with us and the distributors that sell our products and the suppliers that bring our business, our products or our raw materials or what have you. And everybody that's in our ecosystem needs to be taken care of. So if we took care of the clients and then we took care of the employees and the people that make our ecosystem, the third group of people that we need to take care about is the environment and the places that we live in, and make sure that, you know, we have a clean earth and what have you. And you know, we're talking about 1940s here. We're not talking 2020. Okay. So Robert Wood Johnson had that vision. So you go from the clients to the employees, to the environment and the places that you live in. And if you take care of all three of them, the shareholders will get a fair profit. And that to me was so, so inspiring. And it's so interesting because that's what I think the philosophy of business is. So I learned a lot with J&J, but I think the most important part that I learned was the ethics of doing business. And if you look at it from a long-term point of view, the more ethical your business dealings are, the more business you're going to get. So you don't need to be a bad person. I don't want to say anything. But you don't need to be a bad person to do business. Actually, if you do business the right way, you're going to have a lot more business.
Yeah. And I love that order too, right? Because you and I both know, and people tuning into this have either heard stories or seen it in action, where a business priority seems to only be to its shareholders or its, you know, founder or, you know, the people who are going to benefit the most, right? Yeah. And then everybody else is just a tool in order for them to succeed, versus flipping that on its head where the customer is the priority and then the employees are the priority and then the environment. And then lastly, when all those things happen, the shareholders should just benefit as a result of the formula. So I love that. And so you were in that corporate world, then you moved into being an entrepreneur again. Mm-hmm. And then how did you use that, or where have you seen that, like, kind of take hold in what you focused on?
Well, you know, like I said, I was always an entrepreneur at heart in Johnson & Johnson and all the different parts of J&J. I worked in many different parts. I worked in marketing. I worked in sales, many years in sales. I was an IT director for a while. I was a supply chain director for a while. I mean, I did everything, every aspect of the company, and in different companies because J&J is big. So I was able to actually get a really well-rounded education on everything business. And I always felt as if it was my own business, even if I was just a cog in the wheel of a billion-dollar, you know, multi-billion-dollar company. I always felt like whatever I was working on, I felt the ownership of what I was working on. So when I left J&J, and I left when I was 50 years old, and I remember I talked to my wife that we're going to leave. I can tell you all the story about how I left. But I also talked to my ex-wife, and I told her that I was leaving too. And my ex-wife says, "Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to leave. Like, what are you talking about?" She says, "When you joined J&J, I was married to her. You told me that you would be leaving by when you were 50 years old, and you're 50 years old, so I know you're leaving." So I didn't know that my life was so predictable. But I did. I left, and I wanted to do my own thing. And what I want to do is I want to take all the experience that I was lucky enough to actually get and share with people that are, you know, breaking their neck every day, working really hard. And unfortunately, they don't have the opportunities that I had. So I'm not talking about, unsuccessful people. I know very successful people, but the way they were successful was by real pure grit and working hard and you know, waking up very early in the morning, going to sleep very late at night. And they didn't have, or they don't have, some of the, or the access to some of the things that I had. And the only reason why I had it, it was because I was working in this corporation. They keep, you know, training you and bringing you to different seminars and you're learning so much that I want to get back to the actual people that run the country, which is the small business owners. Mm-hmm. 80% of our country is run by small business owners. Everybody talks about the large corporations, but the truth is that most of the economy is small business. So I want to help them.
Yeah. And I think that's great. And I think it's interesting when you talk about that difference between, you know, the access and the information, the knowledge versus, let's say, the grit, the persistence, the brute force of mm-hmm. like just making something happen or being successful in whatever someone's focusing on versus, you know, kind of the experience you had at J&J. And I think going back to something you said too, I think I've always found this to be what makes someone successful no matter what, is that entrepreneurial ownership of a role like it's their own business, even if they're an employee in a company, no matter what it is. Like when you own that role and you treat it like it's your business, then you're going to perform different. You're going to treat it differently. And whether you stay at that company long-term or not, like it's going to benefit you in the way that you handle things and manage things. And obviously every company would love to have all of their employees, you know, come from that aspect, but it's hard to find people who do that. I don't know. Were you pretty rare in J&J in that mode, or was it filled with, you know, people like you who
there were some other people like me. I had really good mentors in J&J. J&J is a big culture company. They like to keep the culture, and it is a culture of small entrepreneurship within a large corporation. So I was lucky to meet very excellent mentors that helped me learned not only about the business, but like I said, the ethics and the philosophy of why you do things. I think it's very important to talk about why you do things, not just what you do, but you know, what drives you, right? And when you have a strong driver, you can get through very hard times and you know, it helps you, of course. And I do have my why. Like I said, I do admire people that build their business. And that's my why. If you ask me, what would you like to be remembered for in the future? And I do think about this a lot, especially when I get older and see that my future is shorter than my past. I like to think that I help people be successful in whatever they want to do. And each one of us is successful in a different way. It's not about money. It's not always about money.
I love that. I think it's great. And I think that's so important, right? Because, you know, we can only do so much and, you know, whatever value you give to others. That's part of my own mission statement as well. The last part for me is leaving people better than I found them in any way that I can, right? Big or small. And, you know, I think once you realize that as a why and a purpose, then it changes things because then it's just about helping others in whatever way you can. So let's talk about the transition. So you leave J&J, you're 50, you go, okay, I finished this season of my life, back to doing my own thing. I know that you bought some laundromats, you did that for a while, and then you found business brokerage.
Yes, I bought some laundromats. I realized that being a laundromat owner was not what I wanted to be and in my life. Nothing wrong with that, but there's no purpose there. There's just, you know, cash flow, if you will. And very boring. I wanted to do something else. So I did sell some. I bought up to 5 laundromats. Then I sold 4 of them. I still own 1, which is a really nice cash flow. Cody Sanchez would love that store.
I bet she would.
but it's a boring thing, right? So I met a business broker and I got into talking with him and I said, this sounds like something I want to do, right? right? It's really helping me do what I want to achieve, which is helping other business owners. And I started with that. And I started, of course, with the small businesses selling hair salons, selling small restaurants and so forth. But I always had the vision that you need to focus. And I didn't feel very successful in the first couple of years, but I did feel like I was learning, okay? So it's not like, oh, I didn't want to have overnight success. I really wanted to learn. And the best way to learn is to do a lot of transactions, which I did. And then I realized, well, wait a minute, I really need to create a network of referrals. And if you're selling a hair salon today, a restaurant tomorrow, and they, I don't know, fire, you know, store the next day, you really can't, there's no networking to be done, right? Because you sell it, it's a transaction, and that's it. Your buyers are going to be a completely different buyer. Another seller, well, you need to find another seller. So it's not a recurring revenue kind of system. And I think to be successful, you always need recurring revenue. And the only way to obtain that is to focus on something and to create your own network beyond the typical accountant or attorneys that will refer you something, right? My network today is enormous, and I'm not bragging. I've worked for it for 2 years really hard. And I think this is not even close to what it's going to be two or 3 years from now, because I sometimes pay more attention to my network than to my, to one seller. Because if you have the right person, he can refer you several sellers, right?
Yeah.
So when I go to places like IRE last week, you know, I focused a lot in talking to the the shingle makers or the CRM people. I have great relationships with the CRM, with one of the CRMs in the roofing industry I met them there. So that's why I decided at the end of 2023, I decided to focus only in the roofing industry. And I could have chosen many others. Okay. So many people ask me, why did you choose the roofing industry? Well, that was a little bit of serendipity. I didn't really think of focusing in the roofing industry until there was an opportunity to focus there. But I was thinking of focusing in one industry, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's great. So when you think of that moment, right, and I know that what set it up was that you closed a transaction, right? A good-sized deal that was roofing. And then that kind of was the impetus for you to decide. What was that like, though, in deciding? Was it easy because you always knew that at some point you were going to focus? Were you a little nervous about, like, essentially somewhat burning the exits of other directions, you know, in industries and being more of a specialist versus a generalist?
Very good question, because many people are concerned, are worried when they say, oh, I'm going to focus on something, I'm going to leave, you know, other opportunities. I'm a huge believer in focus, huge. Mm-hmm. And anything that you do in your life, you've got to be focused. So I wasn't concerned about that. I'm typically kind of reckless. I'm not really concerned about anything. I just go, and fortunately I have my wife that helps me, and I just make decisions and move forward. I never look back. I was never scared about the future, but I knew that I was taking a risk. You're always taking a risk when you're making decisions.
Yeah.
You take a risk whether you make a decision or not. So you might as well take a risk when you're making the decision. So I decided to start in the roofing industry when I sold a pretty large roofing company in Central Florida. And the owner of the company connected me with a couple of other owners who also sold their business, which actually started the ripple effect, right? Mm. So, and then I realized, okay, I'm going to focus on this. And at the beginning, in 2024, I would say I started January 2024 because I sold this company in December 2023. So by February 2024, I sold my second roofing company, which was also a large one. And that allowed me, first of all, I don't sell small companies, okay? I don't sell anything that makes less than $1 million in EBITDA, which is another focus that I have. Because if you sell larger companies, first of all, you're selling to a more educated buyer. So as a broker, we're typically educators. We're educators on the buy side and educators on the sell side. Well, if the buy side is already educated, all I have to do is work 50%. I only have to educate the seller. But the other reason for that is I could sell multiple businesses to the same buyer. The buyers have enough money to buy more than one business. And typically they are looking for more than one business. So you sell one to them, you get to know them. That's what I did last week in IRE. I spoke like with 10 or 12 private equities. I know them all. I know all the big private equities that are looking for roofing companies. So when I'm having conversations with my clients, I already know who might be the right fit for them, or very close to who might be the right fit for them. So you become, you create a recurring revenue, which is what I was telling you before. Now I know what the buyers are looking for, and I'm changing the way I'm doing my marketing too, because I'm going to be even more focused in my marketing than what I am right now.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. Obviously you knew that you were going to focus, the doors opened that said, hey, roofing, and then just kind of like one thing after another that led into this snowball and focus, which I think is helpful because, you know, and I've gone through this in my own life in the past, where trying to be a generalist, trying to say yes to everything so that I don't say no, because you never know, you know, what the opportunity is. And it's more of a scarcity mindset versus mm-hmm. a, like, I'm going to commit to this thing. I'm going to be a specialist. I'm going to have this focus. You have two, right? Roofing, and then of a certain size above the 1 million EBITDA number that you mentioned. And it's like, I'm just going to commit to this. I'm going to be known for this. I'm going to dedicate this, become the roofing guy, mm-hmm. right? Like that you've become, you and your team have come, and, you know, build those relationships. And then how has that helped you? I'm sure in many ways, but like stand out from other brokers who happen to pick up, let's say, a roofing listing,
yeah.
or are going after businesses that you're talking to.
Well, the thing is, you know, by focus, of course, there are many other brokers that do sell roofing companies. I see them all the time. I don't have them all. I wish I did, but I don't. So you know, it is what it is. It's a big market and it's okay. I like competition. I actually don't mind competition from other brokers. I do mind competitions from DIYers. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. Okay. So if I'm working and I'm competing with another professional, I'm fine. Of course, I want to win. But if you know, somebody else takes the listing, I'm fine with that, because I know that the owner will be taken care of. What I don't like is when the owners try to sell the business on their own. And many of them do because they want to save our commissions, that sometimes they think they're high, but they don't know what they're getting into. So especially in the market where I am, which, like I said, companies that make at least $1 million in EBITDA or more, the owners are completely outmatched by the buyers. Buyers are typically, like I said, professional buyers. They typically have more than one or two people. They have armies of people that are going to help them, that know about deal making, that know about terms and conditions, that they know about M&A. And the owner typically never sold his business. So he's completely outmatched. And that's when trouble comes in. So when an owner tells me, oh, no, I don't want to pay a commission, I'll do it on my own, I try to convince him, not because of the commission I'm going to make, but because of the terrible mistake he's going to make. And yeah. This is a mistake where you actually can lose everything you built over the last 20 years of your life. So it makes no sense, but, you know, there's ChatGPT and there's YouTube and there's a lot of... there's a lot of gurus out there, and if you want to do that, you know what I typically tell them is, you know what, I saw a video on how to do heart surgery. I'm not going to do heart surgery because I saw a video of how to do a heart surgery. Okay, Or I saw a video on how to install a roof. That doesn't mean that I can be on a roof and do a good job, right? No. Same thing happens with this.
And it is a tough one, right? Because, you know, humans, especially business owners, I've chatted about this with many times on the show with other guests, you know, other brokers like yourself, where it's like you're encountering this business owner who built this business. They've always figured it out. So this should just be one more thing they can just figure out and do on their own, right? Because they've always figured it out to this point for 20 years, for 10 years, for 5 years. It's just how they've succeeded, going back to the, let's say, the grit and the determination, right? Yeah. So why not be able to do this as well? But again, the difference is that they're growing a business and figuring it out as an evolution over time. What you said is so important. If anyone's listening to this as a business owner thinking about whether to hire someone like Claudio or not, is, you know, when you're selling as a DIY, you're up against a professional buyer who knows how to structure it and make sure they win, even if you don't.
Exactly. And it's not because they're evil. It's because each one of us is looking for his own benefit. I mean, it's just human nature, right? If somebody comes and they don't put any resistance to what you offer them, well, you're not going to change what you're offering them. You're just going to do it. Some people are, you know, are evil, but not necessarily. Yeah. You're not going to lose to an evil person. You're going to lose to anybody that knows how to do a deal better than you do.
Just like any game, right? Like just up against an opponent who's just better. And their goal is to win, maybe not by cheating, but their goal is just to win. It reminds me of a time when I did residential real estate years and years ago, and you would constantly see homeowners, usually in trouble financially, dealing directly with like an investor buyer, thinking, oh, I'm going to save some money. I'm going to save some commission, right? Let me just go straight to this person who knocked on my door, and it never goes well for that homeowner, right? Because they're not a professional at it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I do when I have a new listing, I ask the owners to send me all the emails that they receive from people who want to buy their business. And I have a blast, because 90% of them are nobody. And they represent themselves as, oh, I represent a multi-billion dollar private equity, blah, blah, blah. And I actually check it, and I go back to the owners and I show them, hey, you know what, this guy that said that this, well, this is the truth, right? Because it's a lot about education too.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And kind of going back to your point about, you know, you're an educator as a broker, which I hadn't heard that before. And if you're not careful, you're an educator on both sides, both the seller and the buyer, because you've basically got to be the one to teach them all how this process is going to go. And on that note, with the sellers, with those business owners, like what's the best thing for them to do? They're just getting pounded by these solicitations all the time, right? Like, what do you see? Like, what's, you know, is it probably just referrals for them to say, you know, go to their professional network and try to find help that way, versus like all the cold calls and emails and everything that they're getting?
I think they should hire me. No, but they should hire, and you know, that's a joke, but they should hire professional help. Okay. Yeah. You're not going to do a good deal if you just do it on your own. First of all, you don't have the knowledge. Second of all, you don't have the time to actually have the right negotiation. You really need to spend time. So for example, any deal that I deal with, you know, we have at least 400 or 500 emails going back and forth between buyers, me, you know, setting up the account and the attorneys and all that. It's hundreds and hundreds of emails. I have an assistant that all he does is reply to emails, right? Wow. Why? Because it takes a lot of communication to actually do a deal. You're going to have, for each deal that I have, I get at least 5 to 10 offers. So if you have 5 to 10 offers and you're negotiating with 5 to 10 people going back and forth several times, how many times are how many hours are you using? Okay. Yeah. Then you have to put them together. You have to analyze it. You have to see what actually makes sense, what doesn't. You know, it's not only about the price, it's the terms and conditions and the fine print that nobody reads, but we have to. You know, and it's also, which is also very, very important, and I tell my clients all the time, don't forget that the quality of the buyer is extremely important. Because in these deals, you are going to be living with that buyer for at least 2 years of your life. Nobody's going to pay cash and take your business. In small deals, yeah, that could happen. But in a deal that is at least $5 million or more, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to stay at least 12 to 24 months. So if the buyer and you don't see eye to eye, you don't get along, well, you're just signing up for being in hell for the next 2 years of your life. So you don't want to do that, right? So the quality of the buyer is extremely important. The terms and conditions are very important. And the what I call the sticker price is important, but not as important as people think.
It's almost like the credo from Johnson & Johnson, from your version, and you know, with the suggestion to sellers of what to prioritize, right? Yeah. Like sometimes they want to prioritize the sticker price first, like just give me that number, that's all that matters. It's like, not necessarily. Like if you've done enough, then you understand it, which is the difference between, you know, the do-it-yourself, I'm just going to sell because I just want this number, versus realizing what it takes in these transactions, right? So I think that's great.
And you know that the statistics are really against the business owner all the time. I mean, you're fighting, you're like a salmon going against, you know, the current. As a business owner, to be successful as a business owner, just a fee in itself, okay?
Yeah.
Now, being successful in selling your business is also as difficult as being successful in building a business. Most businesses never sell, and you probably had a lot of other brokers in your program, and you know that, you know, most businesses don't sell. Those who sell, the owner regrets it terribly within the next 12 to 18 months, and they typically don't get the money that they were offered. So the odds are really against you. And you know, one of my other philosophies in life is that you always need to try to stack the odds in your favor, because you can't predict the future, but you can stack the odds in your favor and, you know, have a better chance at making it. So you know, when you study, you don't study because you're going to be successful. You study because you have a better opportunity at being successful. When you work hard, that doesn't mean that you're going to be successful. It means that you have a better chance. Now, you got to be working smart and hard, not only, you know, hard. If you work smart, that gives you a better opportunity to be successful. If you hire the right people, that increases the opportunities. But it's nothing is ever guaranteed. Now, if you do it all by the seat of your pants, you know, you're not really stacking the odds in your favor.
Yeah, it's funny too, as you're explaining that, I'm thinking about your example of the salmon swimming upstream and the struggles for business. And then I feel like moving to the phase of selling a business is like that scene you see all the time on nature shows where the salmon is trying to go up like a little waterfall, and there's just a line of bears just waiting to catch the salmon literally and just eat them. Like that's the visual that came to mind as you're describing, you know, that part of the process.
And it is unfortunate because it's very, very graphic. You're right. That's the way it goes.
All right. So let's shift into the next portion here. Although I already know what your answers are, I already know what you're going to say. This is the growth playbook section. This is for brokers, what you found to be successful. Now, the reason why I already know the answer to this is because of the playbook that you have ran for 2 years now, as we record this late January 2026. You're at your basically 2 year mark of this focus evolution that you took. And so I know that the answers are going to be around focus and networking and relationships and the things like that, that you've already said. But let's go through this, like, and maybe instead of just listing, you know, 1 through 5, like I would normally do with a guest, like just in general, when you think of this growth playbook, obviously there's the focus, there's the network and the value of that. Like what else would be on your list for a broker who's maybe going, I know I could or should focus, or, you know, maybe this is the right approach, but like, what is the best way?
Well, before I go there, I want to say that you obviously are like my ex-wife, and you know that I'm very predictable. So you know what I'm going to say.
Yeah. I love it.
So what I would say is don't be afraid of many things. Like I said, I'm kind of like a fearless sometimes, but you know, don't chase a lot of deals, chase less deals and probably of a bigger number. That's going to help you not to have deal breath. It's going to help you not to be overworked, and it's going to help you lift your eyes from your desk and look a little bit far beyond, you know, the desk, right? When sometimes we're very busy, but if you're very busy in very small deals, you can't really lift yourself up. Now it's hard to do, I understand, but you know, try to find deals that are a little bit bigger, right? Little by little, grow into the lower and middle market, for example. Take time to always think of what you're doing. Don't just do things. Doing things over and over again is not experience. It's just being, you know, busy. But if you take the time to think and to analyze and do a post-mortem of every deal that you do, that's going to help you learn for the next one, right? You're always going to make mistakes. We're not perfect. So always, you know, go back and analyze that. The other day, I was going to take a few hours off and go play golf, right? And I told my brother, said, you know what? I really feel like I just want to go and play golf and not do much today. And I'm a guy that wakes up. I woke up today at 4 a.m, right? And I'm going to go to sleep probably at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And most of the time I'm going to be in this office. But I told my brother that. I said, you know what? I just want to step out. And he said something that made me think. It's like, Claudio, your job is to actually think. And if you're not taking time to just enjoy and walk, you know, down the golf course and think, you're really not doing your job. So go ahead and do it and expense it. And because it's part of your business expense, because you're thinking. So all joking aside, just doing things is not enough. You got to think about what you're doing and why you're doing it and how to improve it. We always, I work with my wife and we meet all the time to see how we can improve this or how can we improve that. You can only do that if you're not running 20 deals, if you're running 3 or 4 at the same time and you have time to think. So I would say that. The other one is numbers are really important, but we said it many times in this conversation, people are more important than numbers. And we can automate and we can look at P&Ls, you know, from every single angle, or you can look at the balance sheets and all that, but neither the balance sheet nor the P&L is going to tell you why the owner is actually selling. What's in his mind? What's he feeling? What does he want to do after he leaves? So yes, focus, but focus also in the people and who is he leaving behind, right? My motto is your legacy, my commitment. And there's a reason for that. I think business owners want to leave a legacy, and your job is, and your responsibility, which is really big, is help that person leave a strong legacy behind.
I love that. And I think it's so important, right? Because at the end of the day, it's really about people. It's about relationships, especially if you're in it long-term. If you're in it short-term, if you're in it, you know, any listeners of the podcast hear me talk to guests about the used car brokers, right? The salespeople who happen to be business brokers who care about money and transactions and aren't thinking long-term, right? Like that, those are the ones that make it difficult. Otherwise, what you're talking about is the relationships. It's the people. It's, you know, if you want to be in anything long-term, then it's, you know, how did people feel? Did they feel good about the interactions with you? And obviously your focus in an industry and then your focus with referrals and networks and relationships, you know, then it's really all about the people. And I love that other part too, what you said about the thinking time. That's, I used to have on my bookshelf for the longest time, a book called The Road Less Stupid, which I'm not a big fan of books with like these titles that like could be marginally offensive, but somebody referred that book to me a long time ago. And it really just talks about this concept of thinking time. And the road less stupid is so that you stop paying the stupid tax by just doing things without thinking and adjusting and evolving. To your point of like, sometimes you just need to step away and think and analyze instead of just, you know, hitting that brick wall with a small hammer and you know, just eventually it's going to work, but like at what cost?
Finding ways of doing things easier and finding ways of you know, systematizing things or maybe automating some other stuff. I love AI and I love automation, but the reason why I love them is because they allow me to have more time in front of my clients, not because I'm replacing the time with my clients. No. It's because I have more time. The other thing that I like to talk about, another growth hack, if you will, that you didn't predict. It's about being generous with your time with people. I talk with a lot of brokers. I had dinner last night with one of my friends, broker friends. I'm in some groups with other brokers, and I have no problem, you know, if they ask me, what's the secret? There's no secret. Here it is. You know, this is what I do, right? If I go to an IRE, I'm going to try to create as big a network as I can. If I talk with the owner, and I've done this, I've been in presentations to hundreds of owners, and I tell them exactly what you need to do to sell your business. If somebody's going to do it on his own, well, he wasn't a business a client for me to begin with. If another broker wants to do what I do, you're welcome to. It's a huge market. It's a huge market. Yeah. I try not to, but hey, if you want to do it, that's fine. and I'll give you the tools and I'll tell you exactly what I do, because, you know, you're always going to get more than what you receive, that's what you give. So if I give you 10, I'm surely going to get 20. Where? I don't know where it's going to come from, but it will. Again, it's a long-term thing. And all you want to do is make sure that you make a difference in the life of others. And, you know, you said this before, and I wanted to expand on that, because the best way to make a difference in the life of others is to find a good ripple effect. And I find that if you help a person, great. You know, it's like the typical teach them to fish.
Right.
Okay. So I can teach somebody to fish, okay, and he will eat for forever. But if I teach somebody to teach somebody else how to fish, he's going to be teaching more people how to fish, and the ripple effect is going to be bigger. And if you look at it from the business point of view, any business owner that is out there is going to be creating jobs. So it's going to be 1, 5, 10, 100. The more successful you are, the more jobs you're going to create. But you're not only creating jobs, you are buying stuff from other people. So you're creating jobs in your company, but you're also improving the business of other people. And if you're good and you're giving a good service, you're helping your clients. So the ripple effect of helping one business owner be successful is so much bigger than just helping one person to do one thing that I think it's incredible. And it's such a good feeling when you do that.
And I love that approach, right? That's why you and I clicked from the very beginning. It's basically an abundance mindset, right? Like, how do you help other people? How do you give to other people? You sharing with other brokers. I've worked at companies with owners who are like, don't tell anyone what we do so they can't figure out our secret sauce. It's like, there's no secret sauce, right? Like, there's nothing new out there anymore. Maybe how you do it, how you execute, you just got to be better at executing than others, but the formula is the formula, right? Like, it is what it is. And I love that you give, especially if we think about, what, 80% of businesses don't end up selling, which means you could probably help an unlimited number of brokers be successful. And that's probably a small dent in the business owners who, you know, need professional help, right? Like, it's not going to pull from your pool. It's just going to help everybody, you know, across the country. So, you know, I love that approach. I think it's important, because when you do that, then it just makes everything easier, because then your intentions are just helping anybody and everybody, right?
Yep. And you make everybody else's life better, which actually, you know, comes back to you, and your life is better. You know,
yeah.
That's how it works. And that's what I like about this. You know, the whole business brokerage industry has so much growth, so much potential. But we need to work together a lot more. I'm happy to be part of the Business Brokers of Florida, by the way, because it's one of the organizations that actually allows brokers to co-broker. I think that's a great idea. Not every other state does that. You know, there's nothing better for a buyer and a seller that to each one have a broker on their side, because we know, right? We know about the process. We know the transaction. We can help them. Now, if you don't do co-brokerage, you're breaking part of that. So I like to do co-brokerage. I love the Business Brokers of Florida. I got a lot of people that I know there, a lot of friends there. And it's all about collaboration, because at the end of the day, like you said, it's a huge ocean out there, and we're just small fish in it.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's great. And I think it's interesting, because in the world of residential real estate, you wouldn't imagine, you know, mostly a world where you didn't have two real estate agent, you know, brokers, one representing each side, or in some kind of legal matter where, you know, there's not an attorney on both sides so that they can, you know, make sure everything's taken. And then in business brokerage, it's been around for a while. It's still the Wild West. I had Andy Cagnetta on the show. He's the second episode. And so he was sharing that, and just, you know, the evolution, it's so far off from what it could be. And there's so much potential, like you said, which is then amazing. And people like you who are just giving and sharing and helping and doing your part.
And I wish we had more brokers. That's the other thing. I think there's not that many. The BBF only has about 1,000, and I think it's less than that right now. But it's hard. You know, many people say, oh yeah, that's easy. You know, just pick up the phone and call a couple of buyers. Like, yeah, no, it doesn't really work that way. It's really hard. And sometimes you work for a year or more and nothing happens. And it dies at the last minute. Okay.
Yeah.
And we get paid on success fees. So you can work for a year or more and not make any money.
Before we wrap up, any final thoughts, any final comments? We've covered a lot. I've taken a ton of notes.
No, what I want to share is that, you know, this is an industry that I think it has a lot of potential. I want people to understand it more. I would like the brokers, the new brokers that come in, not to focus only on, because, you know, one of the things that happens is you get trained a lot on recasting. And it's kind of like, that's the karma that you need to do, recasting. I think there's so much to be done in teaching people how to network, teaching people how to market, having the right marketing strategies. This is a very difficult profession. It really is. And most people don't succeed. And the reason why they don't succeed is because they're not focusing on the right things. Okay. So again, you're focusing way too much sometimes in the P&Ls and that. Any accountant can do that. Anybody can do that. Your job is to build your own personal brand. And to build your own personal brand, you got to focus in marketing and networking. You can't, you know, you can't delegate that. You need to know that. Have the right marketing people and people that can help you learn how to network and focus on the right things. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I think it's so good, right? Because especially in what you're talking about, which is essentially a sales position, right? Even, you know, entrepreneurship is sales heavy, is that, you know, a healthy full pipeline of opportunities solves many things. And then makes it so that you can be selective, like in your case with an industry and then also a business size. Because if you don't have a full pipeline or full enough pipeline, especially as a business broker, then you're going to take anything and everything. And then you're going to end up with rough transactions, small transactions, you know, and or the scarcity, like you said, I think you called it the deal breath or broker breath. You can call commission breath in other industries, right? And so, you know, how do you solve that with the marketing and the branding, which I think is great. And I appreciate you being on here and sharing all this. We didn't have time for the deal that got away. It's funny because when we first spoke, you didn't have one, and something happened recently with one. So we're going to have to include that in the after show. We'll talk about that next
time.
We get together so you can share the fresh wound of the deal that got away, which, you know, happens to everybody. But for anyone that wants to follow up with you, reach out to you. Obviously, you're so generous with your time, and I appreciate you being on here. I talk to and or reach out to a lot of brokers, and many of them are in the category of not generous with their time, and you have been, which I appreciate. And so for anyone that wants to reach out to you, the information will be in the show notes. They can go to the Roofing Biz Brokers. That's B-I-Z broker.com. They can find you on LinkedIn. Again, Claudio Vilas, business broker on LinkedIn. Find it there on Facebook. Your email will be in the show notes. Claudia, I appreciate you being here and sharing all this with the audience.
Thanks so much, Jason. It's been a real pleasure. I love talking with you, and I hope we can do more of these or just one-on-ones, because it's really refreshing talking with people like you.
We'll definitely do it. I appreciate you. And thank you for everyone tuning in. Make sure to subscribe and follow this. Make sure to give this episode some love as well, no matter where you found this, because I think what's important is that, not just for Claudio's ego and understanding that he's on the right path and all of this, but just to show the world that this kind of content is good, and, you know, promote this and the professional and the giving and the abundance and the mission and the mindset and everything that we talked about here. I think it's good to get more of this out there in the world, you know, to help others. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.